I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Next week launches the 22nd annual Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. The walk brings together people from all over Cape Cod as they walk from Provincetown to Falmouth to raise awareness and funds to end homelessness in our region. Joining us to discuss the walk and some of the latest developments and efforts to end homelessness on the Cape and Islands is Don Jenkins. He's a volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. Morning, Don.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Greg Barr, NOAA Director and Housing Specialist with the Housing Assistance Corporation, also known as HAC. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So let's start with the walk for a second. Don, a couple of years ago, this seven-day trek across the Cape was renamed the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk to honor the man who started the walk and for many years walked every step of the route. Sadly, Bob passed away last year. Don, tell us about Bob and his efforts.
So Bob has been a tireless advocate for affordable housing and for helping struggling families on the Cape for many years. This is the 22nd year of this walk. Bob started the Falmouth Housing Corp. He also started and was one on the board of the Harwich Ecumenical Council for Housing. He brought hundreds of affordable housing units online. I don't know if you know the number, Greg, or not, but it's a very large number, plus two food pantries, including the Family Pantry in Harwich. So he's just single-handedly made a huge difference to the quality for lots of people's lives on the Cape.
Yeah, he was very passionate about this his whole life. I mean, even in the walks, some of the last few years that he walked, you'd say, why are you doing it? I mean, he really, it was a tough walk for him.
Right. He liked doing it in the July when it was hot, because that way we could sort of feel everybody's pain and understand what it was like. If people had to go to work and, you know, mow lawns when it was 98 degrees out, then we could walk when it was 98 degrees out.
Yeah. And this year, to honor Bob, his well-worn sneakers will be making the walk?
That's right. The sneakers that he wore probably the last time he walked, which was 3 or 4 years ago. He did the walk in a wheelchair a few years ago. And so in honor of him, we're going to carry the sneakers like a relay across the Cape from Provincetown to Falmouth.
So, his presence certainly will be felt, I'm
yes.
sure. So a number of agencies that benefit from this walk, each providing assistance to homelessness and much more. A lot of it's of affordable housing. So it's a task that can't be done with one single group or one single
right.
program. So all of these programs and this combination of efforts coming together is really important. So tell us about these nonprofits that are benefiting this and how they got chosen or how they got involved.
There are 10 agencies involved in this: Homeless Prevention Council in Orleans, CDP, which is in Eastham, Housing Assistance Corp in Hyannis, Champ House in Hyannis, Gwinden House, Harwich Ecumenical Council for Housing in Harwich, Chatham's equivalent of that, and also the Falmouth Housing Corp. I'm sure I've forgotten one or two.
Homeless, not hopeless.
Homeless, not hopeless.
The St. Vincent de Paul Society.
Yes, two church organizations are major participants and sponsors of this. One of them is St. Vincent de Paul, and the other is the Council of Churches. And a lot of these organizations are, in fact, faith-based organizations. Not all of them, but a large number of them. And Bob has had his hand in almost all of these organizations at one time or another. And the walk that he started actually brings these groups together, because we spread out across the Cape and sponsor different segments of the walk depending on where each of these agencies is located. And it really helped to build teamwork across the agencies over the years. And that teamwork spread out into how these groups operate. They understand what each other can bring to the table. They reach out to each other on a regular basis. We have lots of examples of that. And really is a unique teamwork, I think, kind of unlike what you would find in anywhere else in the state.
Yeah. Don, how did you get involved?
My wife did a fundraiser for the Homeless Prevention Council about 4 years ago now, and I was her marketing guy, you know. So I talked to Maureen and Maggie and the other folks there, and was just so impressed with the stories they were telling me and the people they were helping. And I came, talked to the press about it just to get the word out about the fundraising. And I was also quite impressed with how positively folks like you and the Cape Cod Times and the Cape Codder, et cetera, really responded to this. And so I thought once I retired, I would try and do something similar in a little bit larger scale. So I went to Dave Willard, who is the Cape Cod Five's outreach VP, and he plugged me into Bob, who that was last year, and just figured Bob could use some help. He was getting older and usually did this himself, as I discovered. I did all my homework, and then he said, you don't have to do any of that. I'm going to do it. But in the end, he actually really wasn't well enough to do that last year. And so that's how I got involved in the walk.
And Greg, when he's talking about the teamwork of these different agencies, that's key in the work that you do.
Absolutely. You know, as you're talking, I was just saying an amen to all that, you know, in my mind, because, you know, on the ground level is really where I dwell in trying to help people. It's a daily networking with people. On the drive here, when I was stuck in traffic in Falmouth, yeah, I was on the phone with a girl from another agency, and we're talking about it. She called me about a particular person. Can you help her? And so I asked her questions. You know, so it's like that. It's on a daily basis I'm in contact with most of those folks, at least, at the very least, on a weekly basis. Mm. Those around the Cape who actually do the work of putting their hands to helping people, all of us are very aware that we don't do it alone. You know, we're
absolutely,
yeah, we're arm in arm.
Now, HAC is involved with homelessness on many levels, and the NOAA shelter is just one piece. But let's talk about that piece, because we've got plans for some expansion of programs here. For folks who aren't familiar with the shelter, tell us about the shelter first.
Well, NOAA started in the 80s, and there are 50 beds, technically 55. With legal capacity for 60 when it gets in terrible weather. And it's a place where people who are on the Cape and homeless can go. People come at about 4 o'clock and they get checked in about 4:30. They get a meal. They get a bed for the night. They got to be out at 7:30 the next day. And so they... You know, they have a place to stay while they're in the transition time. And, you know, I say all the time, almost daily to somebody, that people who stay at NOAA, people who are homeless, everyone, you know, none of them is asked to be in that situation. And talk about PTSD, you know, they've been traumatized. They've been smacked by life in the face, I always say. And they just find themselves in that spot. I got so many stories on that one. We're there for them in this time.
Yeah. I was going to bring this up later, but let's talk about that stigma for a second, because people have this sort of stereotype in their mind of who the homeless population is. And I think a lot of people would be surprised. These are people come from all walks
yes,
of life,
absolutely.
All kinds of situations. Some of them may have had families that were, you know, successful, you know, business people. I mean, there are a million reasons somebody becomes homeless.
Yeah, I'll just throw you a couple right off the top of my head. One I just found out. Unfortunately, I found out one guy, not he was not at the shelter at this time, but recently died, you know, out there, you know. But he was staying in a place. But this guy, he was at NOAA for a little while, and he was a working guy. He always worked, always. And he looked good, very articulate, nice guy. And I said, so my typical question to people is, so why are you here? What happened? You know, and they tell me their story. And for him, he has some heart disease that he said, I'm always a working guy, but when my disease comes up, I get hospitalized for a time, lose my job, boom, there I am again. And it's like, you know, Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. All his life is like this. And so that's how he ended up at NOAA, and he got out, and he was doing fine, but it actually, he died from his disease, you know, mid-30s. You know, there's another lady, I'll just throw it to you, and a lady who just got out of NOAA, she's in her room now, but she ended up there, again, very articulate, you know, 50s, and looked good, and held herself well, and all that. And relationship split, and she found herself in a bad spot. She was renting a place. Her hours were cut where she was working. Very typical story. Hours were cut. And she ended up at NOAA. When her employer found out that she was at NOAA, they booted her. And so there she is. But have a good ending for this is she was there about a month. We circled around her, tried to help her. And so she's staying in a place now and she's working again. So that's good.
So let's talk about the NOAA Day program. This is a collaboration with the business community, Hyannis Civic Association, Barnstable Town officials, police, and representatives from the Duffy Health Center. Mm. What's the plan?
Well, the vision started some time ago. I began as the director at Thanksgiving. So I walked into these community meetings, and people wanted to have something for a place for people to go in the daytime instead of wandering the streets for various reasons. And again, I got to throw in here, some people wander the streets because they have no place to live, but they work at night. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when you work at night and you have no place to live, where are you going to go? So anyway, Day Center started May 22nd. We're open an extra 37 hours, and it's a good thing. You know, it's just a place for people to go and hang out, think, maybe watch the news, maybe read, maybe put their head down and fall asleep, interact with our workers, our housing specialist, our employment specialist. Make their phone calls, you know, whatever needs to be done in their life, a large variety of things. Mm. And we've seen it as a good place for people to take a breath and be able to think through what's my next step and move on. And it's happening like that.
I guess, again, when you think about this, if you put yourself in that situation, you know, imagine yourself, you're trying to find a job. You've got to do your resumes, fill your applications, yep. All these things you have to do. Now you're walking around in the daytime. You don't really have a place to, maybe you could go to the library. Mm. But again, you can see where this would be a big disruption. It's a lot harder when you don't have a place to kind of, like you say, sit there, gather your thoughts, right. Maybe get some skills. I know that you've also got some learning opportunities with this program as well.
Yeah. Actually, let me throw in there. Just the other day, since I got there about 6 months ago, I've been working on a possibility with the college. And a guy just told me a few days ago, a professor there, that we're getting very close to the college offering some kind of certificate program to come into NOAA and help people along. You know, it'll help a few anyway.
Mm-hmm. And what's the long-term goal for NOAA?
The long-term goal for NOAA? Well, number one, continue to be a safe spot for people to have another day of life. But the long-term goal of NOAA is, you know, we're trying to help people move on, improvement, move ahead. Let me just throw this. This is our staff developed this. Here is what we're all about at NOAA. We believe every human is valuable and important. Things can get better. And we provide possibilities, opportunities, and practical help to move forward. Long-term goal of NOAA, you know, with this group, the business community and all of these, the desire is to find another site and have a 24-hour, I don't know what you want to call it, but a center, mm-hmm. you know, not just a shelter, but a center. And that's why even today I hesitate calling it NOAA Shelter. I like the term NOAA Center better, mm-hmm. because we're trying to do more than shelter. We're trying to help people move ahead in their lives.
Right. And this idea going forward, we're talking where you're going to be including the community leaders and collaboration mm-hmm. with this. And that's really important because there's been some friction, especially in the Hyannis area. So having everybody at the table seems to be easing that somewhat.
It helps. Yeah. There's definitely been in the months that I've been on, there's definitely some gelling going on. It's not always an easy road. It's often a rocky road, but there's some gelling. I have a good relationship with the local police, and I sit down with them and talk with them on the phone pretty frequently. And all good.
And Don, and with your volunteering with the walk, you get to walk, go around and talk to people about their stories. And it's a lot. One of the things that's great about the walk is that whole community bonding experience that happens.
Yeah, maybe an example of that, just to how everyone works together. There's a gentleman who's a disabled vet. He and his girlfriend, who also is working, so they both work, which is, you know, it's good, but it puts you at a level of income where you're really not eligible for a lot of some of the help that's around. They took in their niece, who was coming from a family with a lot of drug issues, so they were kind enough to take her in, but they lived in a winter rental. So where do you go when your winter rental is up? Where do they end up? And homeless prevention people found them an affordable apartment. So now the question is, where do you get first and last month's rent and security? Who's got $4,000 to do that when you're living paycheck to paycheck? It came from St. Vincent de Paul. It came from the Chatham Ecumenical Council for Housing and from HAC. 1 month each. And so there's a lot of that sort of thing that's going on. And often people will call on the caseworkers at Homeless Prevention Council because they have caseworkers to help with budgeting and working through a woman who her is an ex-husband. She was doing okay. She had a small mortgage. She could afford it, and she was getting her child support payments from her ex-husband, who's a vet. His disability got worse. He got sick and he couldn't work. All of a sudden, child support payments stopped coming. So now she has to choose between food and a mortgage payment. He's applying for the disability benefits, but that takes time. And so, again, the caseworker is working with her, interceding with the bank, trying to figure out how to keep her in this house, helping her with budgeting. She's got two jobs. She's looking for a third one now. And they've reached out to the Veterans Affairs to try to move the benefits along. And they're just trying to get her to the point where she can get back on her feet again. And keeping her in that house is so important, not only for the children and for herself, but also because once she's out of the house and in Greg's hands, the cost is significantly higher. The cost to keep someone in their home, it averages out at about $1,500 per intervention, if you want to call it that, to help someone with rent or get their car back on the road so they can work, etc. Once they're out for months, and a typical cost is $25,000. So it's obviously better financially and also better for the family to try to stay in their home.
Of course. Yeah. We'll talk about that cost effectiveness after a quick break. We're talking about homelessness and the 22nd annual Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. More after this. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the 22nd annual Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk and homelessness with Don Jenkins, volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk, and Greg Barr, who's the NOAA director and housing specialist with the Housing Assistance Corporation. We were talking about the cost, and this is something I think people maybe not realize. It is far more cost effective to keep people in their house rather than they get it's more, it costs us more if somebody gets to the shelter services than getting them housing. And I think, you know, that cost, if you think that would resonate somewhere with state funding because they have all this money for homelessness, but not for prevention. And that's really the key here, isn't it?
Yeah. One of the most important things about this walk is it's a primary fundraiser for these 10 agencies that are all involved in services for affordable housing. And that's because the large majority of the state funding goes to homeless services. And it's pretty much all private donations that keep these agencies going. So it's important. I think last year the walk raised $230,000, which is typical. And that's the largest fundraiser for these organizations on an annual basis.
Yeah.
Can I just throw something in here?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important for people to know, too, that you know, most of the agencies that I know, including us, especially me, we are very discreet in who we give to. You know, we ask a lot of questions, and we want to make sure that if we give $500 this month or $1,000 this month to help somebody move in a place or to catch up on rent, we want to make sure they can pay it forward. They can pay rent in 2 months, and so we just don't throw money around. We're very careful on who we give it to and how we give it to them. And we try to set them up so this doesn't happen again. You know?
We've talked about this many times with Rick Presbury, who's the director of HAC, about, you know, sometimes somebody's in a housing situation that they can't afford. And so throwing money at that is not going to solve the problem. So there are times you have to say, you know what? We're going to have to find different housing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to sell this house.
Yes.
Or you're going to have to get out of this situation and into something you can afford.
Absolutely.
So that's sort of, I guess, is what you're talking about.
You know, when you were talking, Don, about that lady, my mind is kind of gone because I'm kind of thinking, okay, I wonder how much her rent is. I wonder how much she gets at all. And I wonder if it would be good for her to, you know, downsize and get in another place. But then you do have to consider what schools the kids were in, are in. And would it be, you know, how traumatic would it be, if at all, to relocate? Mm-hmm. And then on top of all that, it'd probably be wise for her to get on some subsidized housing lists too. So there's a lot to every individual and every family. It's
very
just complicated. It's just not a 1-2 punch and it's all done.
Absolutely.
So another life wrinkle, isn't like that, really.
Yeah. Another wrinkle is the housing rehab program, where there's funds available to fix houses up that are not energy efficient. There's an elderly man that couldn't pay his heating bill. So as he got shut off and his pipes burst, he couldn't afford to fix them. So he lived for 2 years in his house with no water and no
awful
heat. But the money is available, and this is actually federal money, right, Greg?
Yeah.
He takes a loan, fixes the everything that's in his house, and for every year that he lives in the house, the loan gets forgiven until 15 years goes by. And if he sells the house, they have to repay. Mm-hmm. So he gets a chance to live in a house that's got heat again, and it keeps him in his home. It improves the value of the home, and it takes advantage of a good federal program. So there's a lot of outreach going on around that.
Right. Back in April, we talked with Rick Persbury, CEO of HAC, and Maureen Fitzgerald, the executive director of the Regional Housing Network of Massachusetts, about family homelessness. And I was really surprised to learn that it's at its highest point in 30 years, about 4,000 families in shelters and motels across the state. And this speaks to that prevention again, that the money isn't focused so much on the prevention programs. But that, I mean, the statistics of some of these families, and they were demographics of the families, 81 to 94% of families are headed by a single mother. Median age of a household ranges from 28 to 32. 30% have less than a high school diploma or GED. Average income range is $8,000 to $12,000 a year. How do you, as a family, live on $8,000 to $12,000 a year?
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult. And they need help. You know, my specialty is individuals, not families, but we have a department that handles that. And we were just talking the other day. I was surprised at the figure and of families still in motels around the state. I was surprised at that.
Yeah.
There are 5,600 children living below the poverty line in the state. That number's up significantly over the last 5 years.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, most of the state funding, as we said, goes to housing for homeless, but not preventing homelessness. What about on the federal level? I understand that some of the federal money's been cut as well. So is that having an impact on what you're doing?
I have heard that. That really, for individuals, that doesn't affect us for individuals as much as it does for families.
For families.
I hear that from their department all the time.
Yeah. What about, we sort of touched on the stigma of homelessness earlier. Do you think it's changing? The stigma of homelessness?
The stigma of homelessness. Is it changing? I don't know that it's changing, being honest. You know, as we were talking before, I was just talking to a guy this morning, a young guy. He's at NOAA. He works. And we're talking about him leaving and finding an apartment to rent. And I said, yeah, you know, I think I can find you through an unusual fund. I think I can find you first and last to move in, you know. And I said, are you saving your money so you can pay security? He is, you know, so it's all good. But then he asked me a question that I have asked often, and that is, this guy said, when I find a landlord, what should I say? And what he meant by that is, I'm a homeless guy, so how do I have to present myself?
Right.
And I said, you know what? You're a working guy. You got money like anybody else. Even though you're getting first and last from us, it's still money. And I said, you're just like anyone else. You're like any other shopper. And so I kind of coached him on that and told him what to do.
Well, that kind of goes back to the story you were telling earlier about the woman who got fired from her job when they found out that she was at the shelter.
Yes. So has the stigma of homelessness left? You know, I see the Cape, and there's a lot of there's I think more than other places, there's a lot of rising up to help those in need. There's a lot of that here.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously, you know, with some people it has left, the stigma has left, but others, you know, others still have a, you know, just they should pull themselves up by their bootstraps mentality. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that will forever be, I think. Right. You know, human nature is human nature.
Yeah. There's also a segment of the homeless population that either doesn't avail themselves of the services available or the services don't meet their needs. Is there any kind of outreach to them? I know there is. I don't know if there's enough, but, you know, some of these people go into the camps and try to talk to them about what they could be doing.
Yeah, I admire these people. You know, there's M25, Dan McCullough, and some other folks, and they just on their own started going off into the woods and on the street and just helping people, and other people with money started to come alongside them. And so now they have some financial backing, you know. There's them. There's VinFin outreach workers. And there's other people as well that actually go out and try to find people. And they're, you know, they're successful to some degree. You know, I'll say that different. They're successful to a large degree. But there's a large amount of success to get them out of the woods or out of their dire situations into better situations. There's a pretty good amount of success for that.
Yeah. What about the mental health component and the addiction component? That's tough. Mental health services, access to mental health services to begin with can be tough for anybody, but add homelessness to that and it seems to be even a tougher road.
That is a tough one. You know, there's a lot of it's increasing. The mental health stuff is increasing. And, there's certainly somebody somebody who wants help around here can get help. But what about those who don't want help or just right now they don't want help or they don't want to be stigmatized as somebody with a disability? You know, there's plenty of those around, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have family members like that, you know, and friends. And so do I. So, yeah, the mental health piece is a big one. And then throw in there, you know, this guy doesn't have the right insurance, so he can't go here or there. And, oh, man. And throw substance abuse on that. I mean, that some things are so complicated and some situations are so complicated. But the good news is, again, there's workers and there's advocates always face towards people in need. That is very evident. And there are people getting help. And I've seen people turn around that, honestly, it's, you know, short of a miracle, and maybe it is a miracle that some of these folks have turned around, really, yeah. Because there was no outward evidence that this was going to change.
Well, it's like the work of Duffy Health Center is a good example of the work that they do, and the mobile unit that goes out and serves people. Because if you think about it, if you're homeless and you have any kind of chronic condition, imagine having, you know, diabetes or high blood pressure or any...
Or worse.
And not having the medical services to help you with that. Yeah. So since it's inception in 1993, the WOC has raised more than $3.6 million, which is a good amount of money. So, Don, how is the money divided among the nonprofits involved, and are there any rules or guidelines as to how it is spent?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Each of the organizations that participates sponsored walkers and raise money on their own. So donations could go directly, for example, to HAC. A donation made directly to HAC, they would keep all of it. But also a large amount of the money comes through the churches, through the Council of Churches and St. Vincent de Paul. And that money is shared. Or any donation that's made to the walk at the website we'll talk about is shared. And so in order to participate in that sharing, the individual agencies need to raise, I think it's $2,500 on their own. So that if they show up, they've got their sponsored walkers, they've got their donations, and they participate and raise at least that much, then they can participate in the common funding. And there's, I think, over $100,000 of that coming from St. Vincent de Paul and the Council of Churches. I don't know what the number is this year, but in the past it's been that much.
Yeah.
Wow. And just goes directly to those agencies, and it just becomes part of their operating funding.
Yeah. And so there's no restrictions on how it's spent then. It's just within their own organizational rules and regulations.
Right. To my knowledge, there's no restriction on how it's spent.
Okay. And we sort of touched on this earlier, the success of the Housing with Love Walk, not just measured by the amount of money raised, but the fellowship and community created as people come together with this common goal of ending homelessness. And the stories and the bonding, I saw it last year. It was the first time I got to see any of that. But it really, and some same people come every year, and the dedication, it's really a unique experience.
It is, yeah. And the different towns, the way to think about this, it's a 100-mile walk, but only a handful of people walk the whole way. Lori Sexton walks every year, takes vacation from her job at CVS, walks the whole thing. And a few other people do, but mostly in an individual town, there'll be a group of people that support, like in Harwich, where you were, the Harwich Ecumenical Council in Chatham. And so they'll have a whole group of people put on their yellow T-shirts and walk, and people can see it. And that really does bring out a lot of the more, as you were saying, Greg, a lot of the generosity in the in the Cape. And so if you see the yellow shirts walking around in the middle of July, you'll know these people are walking for housing.
Yeah, and if people wanted to get involved, be it to volunteer with the walk, which I probably is a little late now to do that, next year, but wanted to take part in it, they can just go to the website?
Yeah, just go to the website, murrayhousingwalk.org, and there's all the information about the schedule, which days the walk is in which towns, where lunch will be, which is a good time to stop in.
Yeah. And, of course, we'll put a link on our website. And, Greg, any final thoughts before we wrap up the program and on on the work that you do?
Final thoughts. There's a lot of needs out there, and just, you know, keep your heart open, keep your hand open, and people who are in these difficult situations did not ask to be, and it could be me or you.
Easily, yeah. Greg Barr, NOAA Director and Housing Specialist with the Housing Assistance Corporation, and Don Jenkins, Volunteer with the Bob Murray Housing with Love Walk. Thank you both for being here today.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up after a break, we talk with James Graham about his new book, Victoria, The Kennedys, A Sailboat, and the Sea.